I'm Anita Lustria, and this is Faith Conversations. Today on the podcast, I am delighted to have Erin Lochner. She is author of Chasing Slow, Courage to Journey Off the Beaten Path. And I have to say right off the bat, she is a beautiful writer. And many of you may already know that because maybe you've been following her blog, designformankind.com. If not, you got to go there and check that out. She is also former HGTV.com personality, and some of you may know her because of that. But today we're going to check in on her story, and I have a feeling that grace may be a theme throughout our conversation here today. But first of all, let me just say a big welcome to Erin. Thanks for joining me on Faith Conversations.
Oh my gosh, Anita, thank you so much for having me, and thank you for such a, gosh, that's a kind introduction.
Well, you've done a lot of things, and you're still young, so, but I think for me, to be perfectly honest, what grabbed me was the title of your book, and I'm guessing that's probably grabbing a lot of people. Chasing Slow is something that I think so many of us desire, but we don't know how to get there, and you indeed have had the courage to journey off the beaten path, and that's some of what I want to talk about today. You were a pretty driven young woman. Is that a true assessment, yes. Correct assessment?
Yes, yes, very correct assessment.
And I don't think that's unlike typical young people starting out and moving toward purpose or looking for purpose. Though, talk about maybe some of the contributing factors that might have made you a little bit more driven than the average bear.
Yes, and you know, I completely agree. I feel like we grow up with this formula of what's expected of us and how to get from A to B to C and how to have your life mapped out so that everything's perfect. And then, you know, kind of on the way you realize everything isn't perfect, no matter how much you try to control and plan. And so for me, I think The main factor behind my form of drivenness, which I would say was very fear and anxiety fueled,
which I think is a lot of people in our culture can identify. I think that can be a label in some ways of our society. But how did you get there? How do we at large get there? That's a bigger question. But yeah, how did those things become a part of your DNA?
Yes, yes. Well, I married a man with a brain tumor, and I think that was perhaps when I would have to pinpoint the part of my story that really did add to that weightiness in my own search for purpose, that would be it. He is, you know, currently happy, healthy, thriving, but when we were first married, he was told by multiple doctors, you have 10 years to live.
And can I interject though? This, yeah. I love how you state this in the book, both love and it, you know, gives tension as well. But you say, I married a man with an expiration date.
Yes.
And that, yes. You know, that's big. That's something that's weighty, that weighs, that stays in the picture.
It does. It does. And you know, I talk a lot about how he was so incredible that it was never a question of should I or should I not marry him. You know, it was more, I was going to marry him. I always joke that you would have married him too. Everyone would have married him. He's an incredible man. And yet I think how I dealt with those emotions, you know, I probably did not properly wrap my head around what that meant perhaps, which in retrospect was maybe a really great thing. It got to where I was and I think really taught me so much about perspective and about love and about choice. And for me, what it meant at that time as, you know, a young 20-year-old newlywed living in Los Angeles and kind of chasing after purpose, what it meant for me was just running in the direction of we have a very shortened life together. We're going to try to make the most of it. But the funny thing is, you know, when a woman and a man are trying to make the most of anything, they go about it in different ways, right? So
right.
Ken kind of poured himself into work, and I kind of poured myself into this search, this elusive search for meaning almost and purpose. And even being raised in a Christian home, there were so many, my life was so emotion driven. I couldn't feel that. I couldn't feel that purpose, and I couldn't see that I already had been given it. And so, I would say that really is what set me on the trajectory of this search for more.
And I'm wondering, I was just thinking as you were talking and as I was reading in your book as well, that sometimes that path of faith, of following Jesus, not on purpose. We don't get there on purpose. There are more covert messages than overt that can, I think, sometimes move us toward that path of anxiety and fear, to go back to what you mentioned earlier. Because we're wanting to present well for him. We're wanting to, you know, the big purpose question, because of our faith, hangs heavy over our heads. And I think maybe, I don't know that there are more people inside faith, that Christian faith, than outside that are anxiety driven. But I don't think it's a small percentage of us because of some of those unspoken but very present messages.
Oh, I agree 100%. And it's such a tricky thing because, you know, we want to be excellent. We are called to be excellent.
Right.
And yet we're also called to be, you know, less so he can be greater. And it's that tension. What does that even look like? What does that even mean? And I think for me, the acknowledgement that it's okay to wrestle with that, the acknowledgement that it's okay to not understand it and to not have the answers for everything, that was a really big turning point for me. Because when you're living in the midst of all of that tension and you want nothing more than to just iron it out and to tidy it up and to make it all make sense, that is a really very anxiety-ridden place to live. And I would also agree, for me at least, you know, I struggled with panic attacks a lot in those early years of marriage. And, you know, when I went to a doctor for it, it was so funny because he said, you know, Erin, you have moved across country. You've graduated from college. You're looking for a job. You think your husband is dying. You probably should be having panic attacks.
Yeah.
And it was such a gift for him to normalize that, because I felt before like, oh, Erin, you just don't have enough faith to get through this. I really, truly did. You know, I just didn't have the faith.
How many, I think young women especially, I know men can have this same struggle, of course, but I just, you know, I probably connect with more young women, and I think how many have had that same feeling, you know, just pray harder, have more faith, whatever the case may be. We want to attribute it to something that we're not doing enough of or doing wrong, you know, one of those two paths. I also loved what he wrote on the other side of your prescription.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. It was, just keep breathing. And he was just such a warm man. You know, he really, truly was. And I'm so grateful for him coming into my life at exactly the right moment and giving such wisdom to me.
Yeah, those things are gift. And sometimes, you know, you don't always see it in the moment, but I do appreciate that we do have hindsight to sometimes see the work of God that we don't see in the moment.
Yes.
Well, so, you know, that happens in your life, which is not unimportant to have that acknowledged, and also to say, hey, sometimes we need some help here. But you were continuing on that search, that, you know, what is my life about? You know, Ken had found what he was doing. He, you know, he's in this whole area of film editing, and he really had found his spot, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I think for me to see that, you know, he was very successful. He won an Emmy at a very young age. And I wanted to be proud of him, but I was so jealous at the same time. I wanted that feeling of, fulfillment and of purpose and of finding my sweet spot. And it wouldn't be until years later that I would understand that, you know, it's not a sweet spot unless you make it that, you know.
And I love that. How did that affect your marriage, that sense of jealousy? Or, you know, I don't know how present that was in the middle of the relationship.
You know, it wasn't that, it really wasn't that present until I would, I moved around a lot from job to job. And I kept thinking that the next job would be it, right? The next job I would, all of those feelings of, you know, purposeless and fear, that all of those would kind of drift away. And they never did, even with the new jobs that I loved and even with the old jobs that I loved. And every time I switched or went through a different avenue, they would be silenced for a bit, but then they would kind of come back. And I think they were particularly loudest when I would be in between jobs and when I would be thinking, or, you know, after a hard day at work and, you know, here comes Ken, who has the most incredible positive attitude, of course, given his history and his background.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming that means he has no obstacles to overcome at work, but it's just the opposite. He has plenty and has chosen to overcome them with a positive attitude. So he really has taught me so much about choosing your attitude, about choosing your perspective and your outlook. And I would like to say that there was never any resentment over his position and over his job, you know, moving us to Los Angeles, but it was there. I think it was just that I tried really, really hard to make it quiet.
Sure.
And oh, to yeah. not, you know, I would never want to place that on him. That's my struggle, not his.
I don't know if you can, well, I'm sure you can respond to this, but how much of moving from job to job was, you know, not realizing how to find your purpose or what, you know, that whole journey, or needing a new challenge? Because, you know, you are this gifted, you know, as we see you as this, not in a not like you're self-affirming in your book, but we do see the gifts that you carry, just because of the beautiful writing and your abilities. You know, how much was you needing a new challenge, or was it truly more of, I don't think I've found my purpose yet?
I think it was, that's a great question. I think it was a blend of a lot of things. A few were entirely circumstantial, you know, a few were, gosh, Erin, we would love to have you. We are having an incredible amount of layoffs right now. You know, this was pre-2008 and everything was kind of messy.
Yes.
And so there were some circumstances, and then there were others that I just didn't feel fulfilled in them, and I at the same time did want another challenge or something. That I just always craved that tidy answer at a dinner party, you know, where it's what is it that you do? I wanted to not have to explain myself, and I wanted to just have it be this one word answer like Ken had, and just not say, well, I'm, you know, I do this and then this on the side. And then, you know, I felt like that created an identity that I didn't have, which is silly, but so, so true.
Oh.
It was so, so true.
Oh yeah. Well, and isn't that our search? You know, that identity piece is huge. And I don't think it's huge just for the young. Yeah, I think it's a significant piece that we struggle sometimes, even though we know, as a Christ follower, even though we know, you know, we can say, oh yeah, my identity is in Christ, but it's this broader piece that we still struggle with, the vocational piece and other pieces of that. So I, you
yes,
know,
yeah, yes.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. And I appreciate that, theme as you're talking throughout the book. I'm curious where along the way, and I'm guessing you have to have always been a journaler. I'm not sure if you say that
yes.
for sure, but you must have been because of your beautiful writing. But where along the way did you decide, okay, it's time to start blogging? Where in this the puzzle did that come?
Well, blogging was always one of those things that I had done and then would put down and pick up again and put down and pick up again. I started my first blog in senior year of high school, freshman year of college. I mean, just had been on back way back when it was on the, the old Zynga sites where I'm just old internet. And, so I had just, that was really my go-to when I needed to process was blogging. And some of the entries would be private and some would be public, but I just really, I think there's so much beauty in other people's stories. And I know I learn so much and grow so much from hearing about people different than me and also the same. Mm-hmm. And so, I would say the time that it really truly stuck was about 2005. So while I was sort of journaling and blogging through these early days in Los Angeles and how difficult they were for me.
So is that when you started developing a following? I mean, was that the beginnings, 2005?
So the beginning would have been 2006, 2007. Okay. And that was when I shifted. And it's so funny because I wouldn't call what I was doing blogging in terms of writing. It really wasn't much journaling in that respect. But I had found a job as an art director that I loved and began to catalog art and design inspiration for my clients. And just because I was familiar with a blogging platform, it just seemed like the easiest way to kind of keep everything all in one spot so that I could go from my work computer to my home computer. And along the way, you know, if I found visual inspiration that I wanted to use for a client project, I would email that artist or designer, thank them for their work and tell them about the project and how they inspired me. You know, I believe so much in that personal connection. And so I would say that's where the following kind of grew is at the time, I think artists and designers were moving their work online quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And so to have someone celebrate that and encourage you at the same time, and then for me to receive celebration and encouragement back, there was just really this beautiful community established.
And was that designformankind.com?
Yes.
Yes. So I want to make sure we're sending people there. But what I find fascinating somewhere in the course of reading in your book, I came across this place where, and maybe it was the beginnings of talking with, maybe it was before hgtv.com, I'm not sure, but you were talking with someone and they were telling you that you have a big following and it was kind of news to you, right?
Yes.
And that blows my mind. It's like you were doing this, but really didn't have this recognition that people were coming along and really following you. I would love for you to talk about that and to tell what this following, well, I don't know what it is now, but it's really grown, but back then it was pretty incredible. And you just were unaware, which blows my mind. I love that.
Well, you know, and it's funny, I still kind of approach it in that way. I still feel like I'm just talking to myself all the time. You know, I still just feel like I'm just, it's me and the screen. And
which I think is probably why people follow. I mean, I think, you know, you can tell that. I was in radio for years. Aww. And I always felt like I was just talking to one person. You know, having coffee with one person. And so I think people read that, hear that, whatever. And so I think that's interesting that you're still, that's still the way you operate. I think that's awesome. And I do think people are drawn to that, whether we're aware or not. And obviously you weren't aware. I love that.
It really was truly purely accidental. There was no strategy. And it's funny, my husband is such a strategy man. So he would sometimes, you know, bring up ways to maximize and to make things more efficient and productive. And I just have no interest whatsoever. I just feel like... You know, I think for me too, I know myself very well. And I know for me, if I want most to learn from my writing and to learn from this space, which is what I want more than anything, the helping people and the sharing of the story is wonderful as well. But I also really need to write I never believed when people said write what you know. I think it's write what you need to know. Mm. And so for me, if I start writing for other people, or if I start, you know, painting myself as an expert in something, I think that would really mess up my identity a little. I think I know myself well. I'm fairly sensitive. So it does help to kind of put the blinders on and just write for you and wake up in the morning and say, what do you need to process? What do you need to learn? What's happening in your life? And yes, at some point it feels a little, what's the word? Indulgent, self-indulgent, you know? But I learned so much from this space and so grateful for it. And I can tell the many ways that it's helped me so much.
Sure. Sure. Well, I think there's an element of it that's not self-indulgent. That's actually self-care, which are, you know, two different things. So I totally get that. You know, you talk about loss that you and your husband experienced in your life as well, a significant loss of your husband's father. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to me that out of that, or at least as I read it, what appeared to come out of that for one thing was this move, or maybe what ultimately propelled you toward this HGTV.com thing. Maybe tell that story, because I would love for people who are not as familiar with what you do to learn how that happened in your journey.
Well, you know, my husband's father, was incredible. I mean, obviously he helped make Ken and shape him, and he's amazing as well. An incredible man. And, you know, I was raised in a very, conservative Midwestern home, and we were kind of taught, you know, three girls, we were taught, you know, smile and nod, don't make waves, you know, So for me to, the story is that Ken and I had landed in the Midwest and had really wanted to renovate this home that was a fixer-upper, and that was at the time all we could afford, and so we kind of needed to. And so we just, you know, bought the most inexpensive house that we could find in a neighborhood that we loved, and we were slowly going to fix it up. And I remember mentioning to Bill, Ken's father, that, you know, I should maybe, I don't know, just see if like maybe I should write a series or write a guest post, or I'm thinking small. I'm thinking, I don't know, one article or two maybe. Uh-huh. And he says, you got to go big. You got to just go big. And so, which is so uncharacteristic for me in many different ways. And so, I remember pitching their site, pitching an online show, because, you know, it was such a natural connection of Ken's incredible skills in That's film. True. And he was doing the video and he was also doing all the renovation work. And then I was a writer and I could style and photograph. And so together, you know, it was a really beautiful blend of our talents. And I really felt like it was where we were supposed to be at that time. And so I don't know. I don't want to say that it wouldn't have happened kind of without Bill's nudging. Ken's a pretty great nudger as well, but I do think it was,
I wonder if you heard it differently though, coming from Bill.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
I think you're right. You know, having him whisper it from a hospital bed in the state that he was in,
right,
was really almost like, okay, you know,
almost like, do this for me. Uh-huh. You know, maybe.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So, such a blessing. And he really was. He left so many different legacies for us in both renovations and beyond. Mm-hmm. You know, it was beautiful.
Hmm. How long ago did he pass away?
He passed away and, I always have to think back what year it is right now. It has been 6 years. Mm.
You know, I mean, the loss of a parent is one of those things you never get over. you know, you pray that God will keep walking with you and that you move through the real deep waters. But they continually touch your life.
Yes.
And I just think it's interesting, the way that this touch happened to come through Bill as he was nearing the end of his life. And so what did the HGTV Aaronlocknurse.com special turn out to be? And how, and can we still find this? We can, can't we? Yeah.
I need to look into that. I know they reformatted their site.
Okay.
And so I do have a lot of the old footage that I might need to repost, but I know there are some elements that are still living, probably the more permanent ones, the how-tos and the tutorials. Mm-hmm. It was a 24-episode, 2-year show. So we would film kind of a progress update or some sort of tutorial project each month.
Wow.
And then I would check in each week with more progress or another project or, an inspiration board of some sort. What I loved about it, it was done in real time. So there was none of that. You know, everything on television is, you know, filmed over the course of weeks and weeks and weeks, and then it's wrapped up in 30 days and
30 minutes.
And a wonderful, tidy, you know, and all of this stuff, all of the questions and the doubts and the fears and the anxieties aren't spotlighted.
Right.
And renovating is a very intense, it's a very intense process, you know.
I've done a tiny little bit, and I just don't like it, don't enjoy it. I would leave the house because it was just, I didn't like the chaos.
And that was a
really small amount. I can't imagine doing, all the things that you've done. And I know many, listening to the podcast that are into doing renovations and I don't know that I've met a person that loves it. we all like the end result, but uh-huh. I love your point though about, that you did this in real time, and really the stuff we see in the half hour or an hour long episodes. Yes, we see the finished product and some things along the way, but it's not real life.
Yes, right. And I feel like you can still learn from that, but there was also so much, it was just something really interesting. I know that the community that was very tuned into it would help along and troubleshoot with us. And, we would run into something where we would be so far off schedule with, sunroom progress or with insulating the attic or with, there were just,
sure.
Our wood floors were just a total disaster, and we refinished them 3 or 4 times. And so, there would be so many people come alongside and say, oh my gosh, like that happened to us. It took us 3.5 years to get our floors done. Here's what we learned. And that was to have that kind of feedback, because we were honest about where our progress was, was just, it was such a gift, and it made our renovation so much smoother and so much less stressful, even though it was still quite an undertaking.
I love it. And I think that's the cool thing about community too, right? And people that have, even people you don't know in this context are helping along the way. It's still just a lovely thing.
Yes.
I want to hear, I know others do too. We want to really get to that chasing slow part.
Yeah.
You had run pretty hard and fast and were doing some incredible things, but the kind that can leave you breathless and maybe even, not maybe, but can leave you questioning, is this, not that it's the wrong purpose, but is it fully the right path, and is there another way to do it? And I'd love to hear what happened, where that shift took place, and how you moved into that, because that alone can be a rocky transition.
It can, and I think that's why, we titled the book Courage, A Journey Off the Beaten Path. It takes such courage and bravery to just go a different way, especially when you're, I think not only are we keeping up with society or attempting to, but we're also kind of trying to outrun and outpace those own fears that are saying, you'll be left behind if.
Oh, yes, totally. You're preaching. Yeah.
Yes. And so for me, there was something, I had a moment in New York City when I was there promoting the online show, met with some producers, was offered the opportunity to pursue a network show. And this was coming off of the heels of just 2 weeks of nonstop press junkets, and there were a lot of meetings, and I was very busy, and blisters all over my feet from the heels, and And it was work that I love to do. And I want to be clear that sometimes, you know, it's a hard choice and a harder choice. And
Yes.
I truly loved that work and was so grateful for it. But I knew in my heart, it was not the best fit for my community at home, for my family, for my friendships, for my relationships, for my marriage. You know, we were thinking of starting a family. It felt, you know, very much like a decision away from that.
Let me just interject this one thing, because I think it kind of is begging to be said. This was a life that, these are things you loved, that you enjoyed. And I have a wise friend that said to me, even with good decisions, there is still loss, and loss is to be grieved.
Yes.
And I think we forget that.
That's beautiful and so wise.
Yeah. And
so, you're so right.
So you're, you know, so here you are, really wrestling with, these decisions. And so I'll let you move forward from there.
Well, for me, that decision was such a clear, it was a clear yes or no. Do I want to walk down here and pursue this, or do I not? And to be honest, that one wasn't one of the harder ones. The harder ones were just, you know, how many times you default to the chasing again. So,
yes.
So you've made the choice, you know, say you've quit your 9-to-5 and you're pursuing a freelance path, or say you've, you know, moved closer to family to pour into your aging parents, or, you know, there's so many of those choices that are very hard and harder, you know?
Yeah.
And what happens is we make that choice and we feel right about it and we know it's right. And then all of those doubts come in, right?
Yes.
All of those doubts come in. And then you see someone doing what you love to do and doing it well, and you want that again. And then you have a bad day with your choice and it's not working out, and you know, your expectations of what you thought this life would be aren't met. And you think that you made the wrong choice. And it's really just, for me, I've had to learn, you know, it's not that once you make the right choice for you, the stars align, you know, and then all of a sudden you're happy and life is perfect. It's the daily returning to the wrestling and the tension within that choice and accepting the choice for what it is, knowing that it was the right choice. You know, you made that choice for a reason. And, you know, I know that it was the right one for me, but I also know, and I write quite a bit about that tension that comes with what happens after, you know, what happens after you make that change and you're still you, you know, and you still have the same, you still have the same brain and the same, you know, fears, and you're still you, and you're so disappointed and so discouraged because you think you did the wrong thing, and you didn't, you just had a hard day. You know, there's a big difference.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting. And I love that you said, and you're still you, but you have these other outside voices, sometimes even internal, but you do have these external voices that come at you and say, weren't you the used to be, didn't you used to be this person, or didn't you, you know, which can compound those internal voices. And so it's where we have to keep coming back, as you said, to that point of decision that, you know, okay, no, this is where God led, this is the decision that God led me to. And I've, you know, done my Jacob's wrestling with him on it or whatever, you know, and I may be limping a little here, but, always coming back to that. And I so appreciate that your words here, where you say, it doesn't mean, it's not once for all. There is a continual wrestling on some level, you know, off and on.
Oh, I think 100%. You know, I just feel like life is a series of learning and relearning and relearning again. And sometimes we're relearning the same thing, which can be so frustrating.
Yes.
For me, I think the hardest part was, you know, once I decided I'm no longer living fast, you know, I'm no longer going to pursue purpose outside of myself, or I'm no longer going to attempt to meet or exceed expectations that, that perhaps are not mine to meet or exceed. Well, then I kind of went the other way, right? Because it, my thing is searching for identity. That's where I go. And so then I poured myself into slow living, you know, thinking that was the answer, thinking,
I love it.
Okay, if my, you know, if my yeah. identity isn't living fast, maybe it's living slow. And I poured myself into living slow with the same amount of energy as I did in chasing fast. And that's where that title comes from. It's the tension of,
that's great.
You know, can we just lay it down? You know, can we just, it's not about living fast or living slow. It's about releasing the metric altogether. And can we do that? It is so hard. It is so hard.
And that's where I think that that is where, you know, we are created for community. We can't lay it down alone. I think we really do need community surrounding us that at critical points can remind us who we are or of this mm-hmm. decision that we made or that, you know, it seems like you're chasing this or, you know, those mm-hmm. those voices that we trust enough that we will hear and choose to listen to.
Yes.
And also along with our own personal growth in the area, it's this fuller picture. But I think it's that reality. We just can't go it alone. And often we'll try or maybe have tried in different times throughout our lives and that realization that community is really critical. That's fascinating. One of my thoughts too, as you know, we're kind of loosely talking about community here and the importance of having those voices around us. I wondered, I know there were a variety of factors of why you and Ken moved back to the Midwest, but I also wondered if even being back in a place where you were known and you knew people, if that was a part of that decision.
You know, I think it probably was, and I didn't realize it at the time. I think for me, it was also, you know, we had an incredible community toward the end of our time at Los Angeles, an incredible church, and we had just really found a pocket of very close friends who were like family, which is all you ever want, you know, all you ever ask for.
Yes.
And then they were enough. They were enough for me. But I think something happened when we moved back to the Midwest, even though I was in a town that I did not grow up in. And even though everything felt new all over again, mm-hmm. I felt comfortable and safe. And I think those aren't necessarily the places we want to stay, but I think there are times in our life where those are great places to, it's a great scene to wrestle mm-hmm. in,
well,
right?
When the
environment sets the tone for it.
Oh, I like that, when the environment sets the tone for it. And I was also thinking there are also times in our lives where we do need that soft landing place and a familiar yes. place. You know, I hear people talk about, you know, Midwest values and, you know, there's a familiarity, like you said, even though it wasn't the town you grew up in, you know, there's, it's the air you breathe there. There are the familiarities that probably aided as you moved back there. That's
yes,
interesting.
Yes, mm-hmm. I think so.
And what would you, or how would you describe your life today? So not, you know, you've moved past, well, you may always live in the tension of striving. I mean, I think we each have our stuff that never goes away, that in some ways, that you know, brings us back to God a lot of times,
yes.
ways, right?
Yes.
But how would you describe your chasing slow life? Not so much the chasing, but settling into that life, more of a minimalist type of life today.
So I love that question because when I had talked about, you know, moving my identity from living fast to then pouring myself into chasing slow and finally landing somewhere in between, I was really hung up on the mechanics of what life was supposed to look like. You know, I really mm-hmm. thought, well, if you're living the fast life, then you're on the rat race and you're, you know, working 12 hours a day and you're getting 3 Starbucks in the drive-through. And, you know, I had a vision of what living fast looked like. And then I had a vision of what living slow looked like, which was, you know, you make your coffee from a Chemex every morning. It takes 30 minutes. And You go on long leisurely walks in the afternoon and you make all of your dinner from organic produce and it takes 6 hours and you're enjoying every flavor and you're so in tune with every conversation. And that was also not, I couldn't achieve that either.
It's hard to sustain. There might be a couple of days of that, but, and actually in my kind of, well, I don't know what I want to call it. Anyway, what I wanted to say as you were describing that life was, and then came children.
Yes.
Right?
It's true. It's true. And so I think that's where my hang up was, because I do believe it's possible to live a slow, vibrant life with children. It is entirely possible.
Totally agree. Yes.
We homeschool. We carve out a lot of time for traveling. We do take leisurely walks, not every day, but you know, we'll spend time crafting at the dining room table. Like, there are things in my life that we do that feel very much the ideal slow life, but as many of those times that exist, there are also the times where I lose my temper, where I am, you know, speeding on the highway because I'm running late because I've misplanned the morning, you know?
Yeah. And thank you for saying that, you know,
because
it's true. Yes, I get that.
It happened to everyone. Yes. And so, so I think it wasn't until I could sort of release that ideal slow living life. You know, again, I thought that once my life looked like what it was supposed to as a minimalist, you know, stark white walls with zero furniture and no toys, you know, once I let go of that ideal, that's when life felt really, truly slow. And that's when I allowed myself to have those meaningful connections, because really that's why we're slowing down. It's not to be lazy, you know, it's not to take our name out of the running for having any purpose or significance on life. It's to carve out time for what matters to us in that moment on that day. And that there's so much freedom in that. And so,
well, I think the essence of it is carving out time for people, right? Relationships.
It's all about
that. Which, I mean,
which is why the mechanics don't matter.
Yeah,
you know,
you can do
that anywhere you want to do it.
There you go. And I just think of the life of Christ. You know, you just read the Gospels, and what did he carve out time for? People. Was he never in a hurry to? He was never in a hurry. People tried to hurry him all the time. He was never in a hurry. When whoever appeared in front of his face, his eyes were locked on, and he was not, you know, like the typical business conference or whatever. He was not looking over his shoulder for the next greatest person to talk to. He was all about the person that was right there in front of him, which I think we can struggle so much to do.
I think so too. It's about, for me, it's allowing margin in my day to say, I have time for you. You know, whether that's my kids or the grocer or my husband or a girlfriend or a neighbor, you know, it's allowing that. And it's so funny, because when you do allow that margin, it gets filled, you know, it gets filled with a lot of people that do need that time. Mm-hmm. And what a beautiful way, you know, to approach life.
I love that. And I'm telling you, the pages of Chasing Slow drip with that message. And, you know, I think anyone who is desiring to move toward that would be well served to read through your book and to do it a bit at a time, you know, to exercise that whole idea of taking time, you know, chewing on a bit at a time as you go. I think there's a whole lot there for us to think about, and really, really appreciate not just your writing, but your time here today. And I don't think I said this at the beginning, but Erin, I'm going to post, I know we've mentioned your blog and a couple of different things. I'll post that all at anitalustria.com. Regular podcast listeners know where to find all of that stuff. And we will definitely do that. And
thank you.
I just appreciate your honesty and your time today. Just so good to be with you. Thank you.
You too. Thank you for your encouragement. Thank you for having me.
I'm Anita Lustria, and this is Faith Conversations.